Welcome back to the Morning Shift Sports Radio, 929 The Game. Going to hear from David Archer in a second. Also taking your calls, 404-726-0929. Falcons limp into the bye week at 6-5. Georgia Tech home against North Carolina State on Thursday night. Georgia hosting UMass. Oh, yay.
Bama hosted Mercer, the old Mercer Bears.
The old Mercer Bears. Pride of Macon. So. All right, so we do have a call, do we? Who do we have? Just tell you my ear. We got John in Union City. Good morning, John.
Boy, you know, this is not the way that you endear a fan base to you. By that type of showing that you put on at the 4 o'clock game yesterday.
It's not unconditional love, is it, John?
No. Now, I want you guys to check out something for me. I was told that the only thing that we did in preparation for this game was do a walkthrough, one walkthrough. I don't know what day we got there, but we only did one walkthrough.
That's not true.
Appreciate you, John. Thank you.
We had a walkthrough on Wednesday. The team practiced on Thursday and Friday, guys.
Yeah, just like normal.
I mean, this is my problem.
Don't act like this is some sampling of the larger majority.
No, this isn't about him.
Okay,
this is
good.
About reporting.
My problem is
when you report and you make a big deal out of the one day, people don't see all. They don't get to read all the stories. That's the world we live in these days. That's not on John, because I've heard John's been calling for a long time. But we did more than one walkthrough. The day you arrive, a lot of teams do one day trips, even to Denver, guys. So what we saw yesterday was not about elevation. It was about, honestly, you didn't put your best effort out there. You were injured. You were banged up completely. Still no excuse for getting beat that way. So I don't want to hear it was elevation or they didn't prepare. They prepared. They just got their ass kicked.
I think he's asking the question because I think it's an indicator of the effort level that you saw. And listen, there is nobody on this station that hates talking about effort more
question
than I
Question effort, yeah.
But I
sometimes
hate talking
about it's
that.
So in your face, you have to. You can read body language and level of energy and aura and everything else.
Go back and watch Pursuit on the screens that they hit for explosives. Go back and watch it. Does that look like the pursuit of a team that was hungry for a victory and that wanted to play shutdown defense? Or does that look like somebody that was okay, the people that were okay with getting explosives ran on them, getting the score ran up?
Am I wrong that they also look lost in those screens? They're playing so far off that I just saw guys not being able to, almost not knowing where to go to fight through at times.
I think the secondary looked lost at times. What I want to focus on is the pursuit, though, because that's what this defense relies on. We rely on the pursuit. You're going to have big guys on corners out front on screens. That's just what happens, especially when, like, to your point, that you play off. But you have to have pursuit from the guys in the front seven to be able to make those tackles and minimize the gain. When you're not when those guys are not sticking their foot in the ground, getting off blocks and headed out into the flat on the screens, they're going to go for a lot of yards. And time again, we see defenses against us that make the tackle from the line of scrimmage, from the defensive ends, from the edge, from the middle linebacker. And it seems like we're not getting the same amount of production out of our front seven on those same plays.
You know, I think fundamentally when the team that you love is so frustrating to watch, you're going to have a lot of wild opinions out there that may seem a little ridiculous, but they're just trying to figure it out. Why? Why does this happen? Why did it happen 2 weeks in a row?
Searching for answers. I think everybody
man.
Is.
That's
this
all
morning.
It is.
And I think that probably Raheem's in the same boat watching film.
And I go back to this game against the Saints, and I know you were sleepy for the first quarter, but probably quarter and a half, but I thought the second half of the New Orleans game, defensively, you might have played your best half of football. And you're just a few missed scoring opportunities, including not capitalizing in the red area from winning that game and just saying, hey, got it off to a slow start. That happens sometimes on the road. We won. And this game was just completely different. When you just shot yourself in the foot in the red area on the first possession and went from what would have been maybe a touchdown to what first and goal, Rob, from the one on the Bijan run. Yep. You're now it's two, one play later, it's first and 25, and then you have to kick a field goal. That was it after that. But I take that back. Because then you go, your defense go forces a three and out, and offensively you did nothing, and then that was, it was over.
Well, that was a possession where I think you had the botch snap and lost you about 10 yards and then a sack.
Yeah, and it just can't, yeah, it just, yeah, you think you're right because he did hit Bijan on a
He had Bijan for
will
that
route.
First down,
that
right?
Will
that
route.
Was a beautiful
that
throw.
Phenomenal throw and catch.
It just, it's frustrating. I know we got to get to Kirk Cousins here in just a second, but I was going through the pregame yesterday, and I was making the point to go forth. This matchup doesn't favor Atlanta because of one thing. Since week five, which is really when Denver started turning the corner and when Bo Nix started turning the corner, since week five, like Bo Nix is the number 10 quarterback in the NFL when kept clean since then. But he's the number 28 quarterback under pressure since then. Mm. And I was like, dude, there's nothing that tells me with one of the advanced metric-wise, one of the best offensive lines in the NFL that says we're going to pressure Bo Nix today. And really, we didn't at all at any point. So.
And now he's dangerous when he can extend play, so he's the game may be slowing down for him enough to where he can thrive under chaos.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, let's hear from David Archer. This interview brought to you by Margaritaville at Lanier Islands, an easy one-hour drive from Atlanta.
Well, Kirk, certainly not the results you guys were looking for. Things were tough. You knew they were going to be tough going in. Tell me about this defense and trying to get the ball moving.
Yeah, they are a good defense. But in the NFL, you know, you're going to face good defenses. First drive, moved the football. We got down to the one-yard line twice. You know, we put ourselves back on a penalty, got back down to the one-yard line, and another penalty brought us back. Had to settle for three. Really only had three possessions in the first half. Even the fourth, you know, the last second possession, we kind of got down there. Even the end of field goal range ran out of time. But settling for field goals hurt, and then in the second half, we couldn't get anything going.
How do you eliminate the nuisance penalty? Because like you said, I think one of the plays you might have scored on with Bijan, and then the excellent throw to Drake to get you to the one.
I think the one was a holding holding call. So, you know, that's something kind of out of my element. But the second one was just the motion. You know, we've just got to, with the play clock and everything, we've just got to be able to, you know, have the procedure correct. And so... you know, we just did not execute pre-snap, post-snap well enough. And when you don't do that, it comes back to hurt you.
What's your plan of attack now for you as you get into this bye week, get healthy again? I know you're a little banged up as well. What do you do with the bye week and kind of get yourself ready to go?
Well, we have to have some conversations and talk about how we can be better. And, you know, those are conversations. The conversations are one thing, but actually resolving it and getting answers is the other thing. And so that's what we've got to do. And I think that's probably priority number one on the bye week.
You feel confident with the guys, and I know you do, that can happen, that you guys can make that number?
I do, but it's one thing to talk about, it's another thing to go do it. And with, I believe it's six games remaining in the regular season, you know, we've got this substantial stretch here where we need to play our best football. And, you know, that starts with kind of on the bye week, having conversations, doing self-scout to resolve some of the things that haven't been good enough, and then make sure that the corrections show up in the last six games of the year, starting with our game against Chargers.
Kirk, as always, thanks for your time, man.
Yeah, thanks, Arch.
I do wonder, because you were there yesterday, Bo, how significant the crowd was. Because it was kind of hard to tell on TV and on the radio.
I heard Arch say it's the loudest he's ever heard it.
Yeah, it was. I've been there. This is my second trip there. I was there in 16. We were able to quiet that crowd in 16. It was very loud. It felt like it was loud enough. You saw multiple times where they came out of huddles where the receivers went the wrong ways.
Right. And that's why I asked. Because you hear Kirk say, you know, the pre-snap stuff, the clock's getting down, you're trying to rearrange things. And it seemed significant, but it was hard to tell.
That stadium shakes.
Yeah.
When, in fact, you guys think I'm, you know, I think it, people kind of.
Louder than Seattle?
I don't think it's louder than Seattle necessarily. I think it's different because when, I mean, literally I'm sitting there looking through the field goggles, which is binoculars, and the like, they're moving. Like, I'm having to hold them steady. They're moving not because my hands are shaking, but because the building is moving. It's just a different type of element. Seattle is probably, to me, the loudest I've ever, the side of stadium I've been in, I think, is New Orleans. I think part of it is where we sit so high up that the sound is coming right down off of us. But Seattle would probably be too. I think Denver is in the top five to seven. I'm just telling you, the fact that the building shook all day, every sure. Second down, third down, first down.
We didn't give them a reason not to. I can tell you that.
And let me say that what I give the crowd a lot of credit for is as the team starts huddling, it just gets super loud. Play's over. Silence. Mm. And then when the play clock hits about 20 to 19 seconds, you can see they're about to exit. Boom, it just gets super loud again. They are a very good crowd there in Denver.
Yeah.
I'm really worried about this game against the Chargers. Defense has been good all year. Now the offense is waking up.
Have to.
That's yeah.
It. First time over 30 yesterday when they beat the Bengals.
The remaining slate is a combination of like three football teams that are semi-disastrous and three football teams that are really good.
Yep. Yeah.
Commanders, so Vikings, Chargers, really good. Giants.
Weird game for the Chargers, though, yesterday because they were up 24-6, 27-6, I think, at halftime.
Yeah.
And they sat on it. And Cincinnati, who was a flawed team in a lot of ways, man, not trying to call anybody out, but I watched Trey Hendrickson a lot last night.
Yeah.
On the plane.
Mm-hmm.
Dude.
I thought you were going to say something about Joe Burrow's outfit on the way in.
Well, yeah, the pantsuit.
He tries too hard.
That was a pantsuit.
You live in Cincinnati.
But
the Hillary Clinton collection.
Yeah, right? Coming from a guy that says he doesn't like Halloween. I was like, that's because you dress up every Sunday, Joe. But the way Trey Hendrickson comes off the ball and just shoves guys into the back, I'm glad we don't got to play that guy. I mean, that guy is.
He also swatted his coach's hand yesterday, which was very interesting.
Yeah,
well,
I think that's a lot about nothing. I mean, don't touch him.
All right, coming up in the huddle, this team has the league leader in passing yards, the league leader in receiving yards, the league leader in sacks, and a 4-7 record. And a historical day. A former Bulldog makes history. Coming up next in the huddle, Sports Radio 929 The Game. This hour brought to you by Zero Res, a smart, lasting, clean. David Archer going to join us at 8:20 as we do the autopsy on that debacle in Denver yesterday. Hawks blow a 16-point lead, lose in Portland. They're in Sacramento tonight. Then they have to go to Golden State. Then they have to go to Chicago before finally returning home on November 25th against the Mavericks. Georgia Tech hosting North Carolina State, coming off that big win over Miami. Georgia's got UMass, and of course, the regular season comes to an end on that Friday night after Thanksgiving. Georgia Tech going to Athens. The Tech may have something to say in that game before all is said and done, believe it or not, people. All right, let's do it. Let's go in the huddle, shall we? All right, gentlemen, as I teased, how about this? Joe Burrow and the Bengals, 7 losses. He's completed 67% of his passes, averaging about 308 a game, 18 TDs, 2 interceptions, passer rating of 107.6. How do you figure it? And you also got the league leader in sacks. You know, Hendrickson as well. That's just the most baffling thing.
And don't ask Jamar Chase, because Jamar Chase, I don't know, this is the age-old answer from wide receivers that are not happy with their targets. And Jamar Chase, I don't know, don't ask me, I don't call the plays. You never want to hear that, right?
Okay,
when you're a fan, you never want to hear a wide receiver in a press conference say, don't ask me, I don't call the plays. That means something
I'm
is going,
doing my job.
That means something is going extremely wrong
I'm perfect
within your
and
franchise.
Fine. It's the rest of y'all clowns.
Don't ask me, I don't call the plays.
I mean, he got targeted. I don't know how many times he got targeted 13 times last night,
right.
And he had a couple of drops too, mind you. So maybe, you know, a couple of them, if he makes it, the ball keeps moving in the first half. So I'm not really I'm not going to sit and criticize Jamar Chase because he's been the best, maybe the
best.
He's
unbelievable.
He may have been the best receiver this season, and I don't think he played a down in training camp or preseason or anything. So, but T. Higgins stepped up too. He had 9 for 100, almost 150.
Mm.
There's something odd with this team because you have all these standout individual performances, yet
it's weird.
They lose. I know Evan McPherson, who's been a pretty solid kicker in the league, and throughout his, you know, his college career has won as well.
Yeah.
He missed 2 field goals. They win. That's a different game if he makes even one of them.
Yeah.
To
your point, I said the same exact thing you're talking about the Cleveland Browns yesterday, playing South against the New Orleans Saints. Like, Jameis goes for like 400 and no interceptions, and you're sitting there going, how did y'all get blown out by 21?
Yeah.
It's mind-boggling sometimes. That's how football is. There's the small situational plays that, you know, win and lose you games, and no matter what the stats are, sometimes it just doesn't come down to that.
Well, I think if I was told a long time ago, every game comes down to like a couple of moments or a couple of plays that can make a game you know, if one team wins all of them, it's a blowout, right?
Right.
And if you kind of even them out, then the game, the first half, the Chargers, Los Angeles, won every big moment in that game that we're talking about between them and the Bengals. In the second half, other than the last moment, which was the Dobbins run, the Bengals won everything in the second half.
Yeah. There's a lot of craziness out there. And to your point, I kid about the Joe Burrow wearing the pantsuit thing, but there is just something so strange about that team. Just from top to bottom, man, there's like an identity crisis with some of them. So many good players, and yet the production's just not there when you look at the wins and losses.
Brock Bowers sets a all-time NFL record. Most receptions by a rookie tight end, 13 catches, 126 yards, 23-yard catch and run for a touchdown as well. Kind of a new-look offense out there in Oakland. I mean, Oakland.
I do Vegas. The same thing all the time. I have
Vegas
not wrapped my mind around that.
We just did it back to back, huh? don't worry about that. Dude, 70 catches already this year. 706 yards. Am I reading that right? And 3 touchdowns. He's going to break some records.
Oh man. You know what's funny about that entire thing is obviously us getting to know Brock Bowers from the University of Georgia and knowing everything. You know, you become semi-fan of his because he just seems gritty and seems to do things the right way. And you're like, I don't know how much success he'll have in Vegas. I was one of those people who's like, I don't know, man. It's going to be tough. There's not really a good quarterback situation. And then you find yourself, because of all that, you find yourself kind of rooting for him. You're like, oh, man, that's cool. You know, look, he's doing good things. And then all of a sudden you start creeping up to that game. And after the Falcons played the way they did yesterday, and you look at what he's doing, you start creeping up towards Monday Night Football in a few weeks, and you go,
there's no guarantee.
Dear God.
Man. Yeah.
Dear God, please don't do this. If he has 13 catches and the Falcons play defense the way they did yesterday, whoo! Yeah, that ain't gonna be.
You know,
good.
He does. He's not really known as a man of a volume of words as far as Brock Bowers
right.
said. My job, just catch the ball, get yards. I mean, that's about it.
Catch the ball, get yards.
Well, I mean, if you want to stop Vegas, Just key in on him because the last six games, he has 12, 10, 14, 5, 8, 16. Those are the targets. Targets.
I feel like we're going to put like A.J. Terrell on this guy. You feel like they win or lose, it seems like, based on him.
You're joking. I'd put Jesse Bates on him all day long. And I would give – and I would probably –
I don't know if even that
would
be good.
And I would start there and then have a backup plan.
Right. Hey – And to your point, it still blows my mind that Richie Grant played nickel yesterday when we had the Kevin King injury.
Natron Brooks, I believe, played Kevin King.
Natron Brooks played the second half.
Yeah, Natron Brooks played because Richie didn't work out well.
No, I'm like, that was our plan? That was our, okay. Oh, interesting.
The Steelers won in the most Steeler way possible yesterday, an 18-16 game where they kick 5 field goals. Steelers won 8 of their last 9 over the Ravens, 18-16 the final.
That's the second game this season they've won without scoring a touchdown.
Yeah, the first one, yeah, right here in Atlanta. Yeah. Is Mike Tomlin coach of the year? I mean, hook or crook somehow.
I'm trying to think.
You can't say that. I mean, we can't go that far yet.
This is what.
And I love Mike Tomlin.
Pump the brakes, kids, what you're saying.
Well, I'm saying, like, are we going to – is Russell Wilson the MVP? Because they've been pretty good since he's been playing.
Well,
I mean, you know.
Well, defensively, though, just somehow
– they're unbelievable.
In navigating the egos with Russell and your other quarterback, Justin Fields, and kind of making that work.
What if
to Justin Fields, it's, well, I just wasn't playing well enough. You know, that's all there is to it.
What about Sean McDermott?
Huh?
What about Sean McDermott for Coach of the Year? Because, look, Buffalo lost – a lot of players. Remember, the window crowd was screaming that their window had closed. They're 9-2. They just beat the only undefeated
good, dude.
I mean, they beat Kansas City. It was 9-0. And
was that a fourth down run for Josh Allen to seal it?
Yeah,
they went
fourth
for it
and
on
two.
Fourth down, and he tucked it and ran
26 yarder.
Yeah.
There's a number of guys that can be in that conversation right now. And
Jared Goff, I'd put him in there.
Well, and I was going to say, you talk about Coach of the Year. How about Kevin O'Connell?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Kirk Cousins, we'll see you later. Also, very good. Like,
right.
Very good.
Right.
And going about things the right way. So, yeah, dude. There's a lot of interesting conversations when you talk about postseason awards.
If Washington – now, look, hear me out. If Washington was to finish out, say, 10-7, 11-6, Dan Quinn should get consideration.
Can he get comeback Coach of the Year?
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. I don't know if that exists, but it should be.
I tell you one thing, Mike McCarthy sure as hell misses him.
No. Yeah, there's no doubt about that, man. And there's You start looking, to your point, you just talked about Dan Quinn. I just talked about Kevin O'Connell. That's a couple of coaches you're going to see very, very soon as far as facing off against the Falcons, and it's hard to feel good about those games.
Yeah, it is, but we've seen this. You know, every game is different with matchups, and the blueprint now is come up and play physical and tight on our receivers and make them create their own separation. The last 2 weeks, we haven't done a very good job of that. We've got to figure out whether that's Zach Robinson scheming it or these receivers looking in the mirror and saying, we got to be able to get off this grabby press, you know, kind of covers that they're trying to play on us.
And who's going to win the NFC West? Everybody's in the conversation. Everybody's at 5-5 except Arizona. They're 6-5, and Arizona, much more physical team than you think they are traditionally. And Kyler Murray's playing very well also.
Tough.
All right, coming up, the goings-on in Athens. I think Carson Beck got rid of his Lamborghini.
You think so?
I think that's what I heard, yeah. Mm.
And what maybe he's using a Lona.
He was a Lona.
Lona.
And what you got?
We got mic'd up, man. Look, got home, got to sleep at about 11 o'clock last night after Falcons post game. I woke up in a bad mood, and a man named Rafael Campos brought it home for me. Made me feel a lot better this morning. I'll try to do the same for you with a couple of shout-outs and maybe a sound clip that'll put you back into perspective, man. That'll come up on Mic'd Up on Sports Radio 92.9.
Oh, by the way, this hour brought to you by Zero Res, a smart, lasting clean.
Ding.
I don't know what they're looking for. I really don't. I wish they could really define the criteria. I wish they could do the eyeball test where they come down here and look at the people we're playing against and look at them. And, you know, you can't see that stuff on a TV. And so I don't know what they look for, but that's for somebody else to decide. I'm worried about our team.
Welcome back to Morning Shift. Kirby Smart talking about how he's befuddled, baffled by what the criteria is of the college football playoff committee. Of course, Georgia beating Tennessee 31-17. And Josh Heupel still complaining about the officiating today.
Well, get over it. I mean, look, you all get over it. I heard they were complaining about the heaters on the bench going out, and when it was like almost 60 degrees Saturday night. I thought the point of the college football playoff expanding was to help include teams that got better through the year or that played extremely tough schedules compared to others and did well.
The schedule thing's clearly out the door.
Did well.
I don't know.
I would tell you that, you know, I think people can get upset that Georgia was ranked 12th last week in the playoff, but they were coming off an 18-point loss on the road where they looked abysmal. And then they could come home and they beat a team that had one loss by 14. I would be hard for, unless somehow Georgia Tech slips, just trips up Georgia. I don't see how Georgia's not in the playoff after.
I don't either.
After winning,
don't sleep on Tech, man.
Well, it's not that. Like I love what Brent Key is doing, but the reality is, Georgia shouldn't lose that game. And if Georgia loses that game, then they don't deserve to make the playoff. But if they win that game, if they win out with their schedule, they should be an easy lock to host a game to me.
You think they'll be hosting? That's the next question. That's the next question is will they be hosting?
Well,
And look, I come at this from a place as a Bama guy that I don't even feel comfortable because I'm not so sure that Bama, the way they play up and down, can beat Oklahoma and Auburn. They play good and then awful and then good and then awful. But I look at Georgia, and I think the next question for Georgia fans will be, are we good enough to get a home game? Like, that's what you're going to have to figure out over the next few weeks.
And I think you want a home game because there's a clear advantage of playing a home game in any sport, especially college football, to me. But the reality is I'm not afraid to go play a road game if I am Georgia. I mean, I thought Austin, Texas was supposed to be a tough place to play. You tell me that the Grove is tougher? Because you probably make that argument based on what you saw.
Well, when you pump about $10 million into your offensive and defensive lines, the Grove got a little tougher.
Well, you don't think Georgia's got a few million on there?
I understand.
I would say
that's what Ole Miss was missing, though.
I would say that the opponents the opponents that will be hosting, I think you almost think that they're better matchups. Right? You look at Indiana. I don't think Georgia fans are scared of Indiana. Look at Notre Dame. I don't think
no.
You know, and look, it is what it is, but those are the teams that you'll be looking at in those home games, right? If Indiana doesn't win the Big Ten, Now, of course, that's going to be, you know, how far does, you know, whoever loses the Big Ten championship, how far do they fall? And you got Penn State, Ohio State, Oregon ahead of them. But you're still looking at situations where some of these teams are going to host games that really, I mean, that you're not that afraid of, I guess, in the end. So I think the worst case scenario if you're Georgia is that you don't host and maybe you have to travel to Ohio State. Because I think talent-wise they match up in that scenario, right?
Yeah, sure. I think the quarterback thing is a push there. I think there's some talent where the Ohio State has the leg up, and then there might be some other sides where you do. You could used to say that, well, we'll go push Ohio State around the trenches. I don't know if that's the case this year.
I will say too, and to bring this into perspective, I did see that our buddy Jerry Palm, who we had on last week, his projection is, and I don't necessarily buy into this, his projection is for Alabama to win the SEC and have a Georgia-Alabama rematch in what I think would be the Sugar Bowl in the quarterfinal game.
So that'd be interesting.
That would be very interesting.
Because that's almost a home game for both teams.
I was going to say, I think that's best case scenario for New Orleans. They're looking at it going, yes!
Yeah.
You'll probably see both those schools show up in that one. So I don't know, man. There's just a lot of things left to be panned out, but the truth of the matter is that Georgia is now done with their SEC slate. Right, and a lot of teams are not. And like we just mentioned, Bama's going to go on the road to Oklahoma this weekend in a game they should win, but doesn't mean anything for Alabama right now. And then they'll play Auburn in a game they should win, but you saw it as recent as last year when they have to have a 4th-and-31 to win. That game's never easy. And you look around the other teams, I mean, Ole Miss is in the same boat, man. A lot of these teams are kind of in that same boat. Tennessee needs to have some style points over the next few weeks after what happened this past weekend.
Who does Tennessee have left? They got Vanderbilt.
They have Vanderbilt. And
that's not a gimme anymore.
What is their other SEC game? They've got another one in there as well, I believe.
Indiana's got to go to Columbus on Saturday.
And look, man, hats off to Florida as well for being able to get it done. Brian Kelly's got a lot of questions answered at LSU, doesn't he? I mean,
UTEP and Vanderbilt is what's left for Tennessee.
Oh, I thought they had one more SEC game, but yeah.
Yeah, hey, how about for Brian Kelly, maybe the yelling at players is not something, you know.
It's not a good look, is it?
Oh, stop.
Hold on. Hear me out.
You can't yell at a player?
It's not. Brian Kelly doesn't yell at players. He gets in full-fledged arguments with players on the sideline. He's not a likable guy to begin with.
If he was winning, it'd be different.
Well, I have no problem with yelling at players. I like to yell at everybody.
I
think yelling should be a thing. But the way he does it is not a good look. He's got a history of it. Also, you've lost, what, 3 straight?
What does not a good look even mean? Wow. Because he's losing.
It's not a good look in an era where players are looking for a reason to take the same amount of money somewhere else.
Well, and that's a player issue, right? And that's what he'll have to decide moving forward is which one does he want to be. But I'm not going to sit here and diss Brian Kelly because he got in somebody's butt over bad football play and lack of effort. That's what he should be doing as a football coach. Let's hit a mic, though. A couple things to get to before we hear this Rafael Campos sound. Shout out to our buddy LV on Twitter. His daughter, Madeline, down at Choa, has lung surgery yesterday, hoping to be discharged today, man. You talk about bringing it into perspective. That's awesome stuff, man. So shout out to Madeline. Hopefully you're feeling better, and hopefully there's a short road to recovery for you. Also, yeah, give her a round of applause, man. Big 92.9 The Game listeners, big Morning Shift listeners.
That's
going to
be devastating when you have a child that's sick.
Dude, I'm going to get there in just a minute. Well, not quite there, but, you know, I'll kind of bring that in perspective. Also, shout out to all my folks that I saw at Griffin, Georgia on Saturday night. Went down to Griffin, Georgia, hung out at Buffalo's Cafe. My buddy Kenny bought me a couple of beers. Man, really enjoyed the people down there. A lot of Mafia members showing up and being a part of that. It was a lot of fun. It's the farthest south I've been past Land Motor Speedway. So shout out to the people down in Griffin that made that a good time. All right, so this is something that Rob and I both understand at this point. Bo is going to understand very, very soon. So I woke up this morning kind of in a bad mood. The first video I see is a man named Rafael Campos. Now, if you're not familiar with him, there's probably a pretty good reason. He is number 147 on the tour right now in the FedEx Cup standings, and he has missed 13 of his last 14 cuts. He won yesterday. He's a Puerto Rican native. He wins yesterday. And to cap it off, he actually had a daughter on Monday. Let's listen.
I think really everything has changed this week. Not because I'm playing well. It's just I had a daughter on Monday. And it doesn't matter if I play bad. They don't care. You know, my wife doesn't care. My daughter won't care. So at the end of the day, if I end up losing my job, I lost my job. And I got a beautiful daughter and a beautiful wife back home just waiting for me to hopefully give them a hug.
Rafael Campos was in danger of losing his tour card because of all the missed cuts, and he's been back and forth between the PGA Tour and the Korn Ferry. Won on the Korn Ferry a couple of years ago. Now that he wins this weekend, he can not only have that security, he can set his schedule over the next couple of seasons because he will be on the PGA Tour for the foreseeable future.
$1.2 million. 14th first-time winner on the PGA Tour this year.
This is a guy who was fledgling, who was getting ready to maybe have to make a decision about his golf career and everything else that comes with it. He has a daughter on Monday, made a couple of mentions about God looking over him. Just an awesome story and one of those things that I probably needed this morning because, like a lot of Falcons fans, I'm in a bad mood, and Rafael Campos does a good job of kind of bringing it all into perspective,
man. You needed to wake up and have a shot at get over yourself this morning, didn't you, young man?
I did, man. And you, I have a daughter, obviously. Yeah. I have a daughter and a son. Bo's getting ready to have a little squidette. And so I think that just kind of brings it all in perspective, man. Just a tidbit of good news on a rough, rough Monday morning here in the city of Atlanta.
Yeah, man, I saw this on SportsCenter when I got in once I woke up. I thought it was kind of cool. I thought it was a really cool moment. I mean, it puts it in perspective, doesn't it?
It's awesome, man. It really is. There's nothing like it. Nothing like being a dad. I know a lot of people out there listening feel the same way. So, Rafael Campos, congrats. Madeline, we're all thinking about you. Hope you feel better soon.
Oh, we're going to man up now, aren't we? Top of the hour. It's time. Man, I am way under 500, gentlemen.
I hate this thing.
I am in line for a number one draft pick. I'm going to be in the draft lottery with my picks so far this year. We're going to man up coming up next on the Morning Shift Sports Radio 99 The Game.